It is time to bring in Greg Schramm and Tim Luke, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This. Treasure Quest Appraisal Group is their group, and you can find them on the web, tqag.com, and you can also find them right here on a Tuesday morning on Robinhood Radio. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Your state has obviously, for incredibly sad reasons, been in the news lately, and will continue to be there. And I have to ask you both about this, being residents in there in South Florida. Are people there as shocked or as everybody else across the country that a skyscraper like that is residential would collapse like that?
Yeah, it's really been devastating on a lot of people down here in the area, especially down where it's happened. And the fact, I think, that it happened in the middle of the night it is probably one of the, for me, like one of the most shocking things that they, and then they show the video of it actually happening, and it every time they show it just makes my blood curdle. It's just shocking, and it's really kind of feels it's unreal. It really is, because you don't think something like this is going to happen here. And at first, I'm sure, like a lot of other people, my mind went where it shouldn't have, and I thought, oh my God, here it is, somebody blew up this building. You know, that's where we are today, and I just find it extremely disheartening.
Well, we'll get over that now, because I want just one thing right on top of that, and you don't hear this much very often. There's an auction that's going on through July 14th, and it's Roger Federer's memorabilia, and so far, he's raised over 1.3 million pounds for his foundation. That's pretty amazing. You don't necessarily hear of tennis auctions like this, especially when somebody's still playing and is still considered part of the game. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
It's not like he's a baseball player from the 50s or 40s or anything like that. And it goes to his, what's great about it, everything that's raised is going to go to charity. It's not for him. It's his baby that donates to charity, and I think people who use their fame and their fortune for that, there needs to be more of them.
Well, it's not uncommon that celebrities do this sort of a benefit, as it were. I think a lot of times it just depends on the status of the celebrity, how much publicity they get. And there are a lot of athletes and celebrities who actually have foundations that sell things of that, and then the proceeds are going to their foundation. So, but the fact that Roger Federer is such an iconic sports star and tennis player, I think that also helps. It's going to help the foundation. So go ahead.
Well,
Tim.
It definitely does. And a little bit more about this is that it was actually on June 23rd. There were 20 lots that were in a live auction, and they brought $1.3 million. Those were the 20 lots that were part of this live auction that was to benefit the foundation. And the rest of the items are up for bid until the 13th and 14th of July. There's online, and there are over 300 lots. And one of them is one of the highlights is a Marshall favorite. It is a champion sneaker. It's a Nike tennis sneaker from Wimbledon.
Well, yeah, why not? Why not tennis players if basketball players can do it?
Exactly, exactly. I just thought, oh, look at this. So there are some interesting things, and I think that will generate. And I think the strategy in which they launch this is really great, because they put together a small portion, 20 lots. Probably was a big VIP dinner or big VIP event, great, and said, here it is, and then opened it up. So there was publicity about the first 20 selling for £1.3 million. And then now we have 300 more items that are going up, and this is what's going to be sold. So it's a good strategy, because it's also good marketing.
Now, before I go on to my next story and ask you about this, I'm sitting here looking at the way we operate now as a radio station, and I just finished interviewing Thorin Christendotter from Main Street Magazine. Now, coming out of this pandemic, we've learned a lot of new ways to operate, which are beneficial and which make us operate much better, and Thorin is the same way. I've got a feeling the auction world is the same thing. I mean, it was a devastating thing to go through, but I think everybody hunkered down and learned, and I think operate more efficiently now, or am I wrong about that?
Well, you know, I think in several different ways, what's happened during the pandemic, the auction industry has been prepared for, even though they didn't realize how it was going to, how soon it was going to be, and how deep it went. But I really think that because over the past 7 to 10 years, online auctions have become so much more prevalent, and people understand it and they feel confident. So I think that although there has been, as I call it, a global reset in almost every single industry, in the auction industry, I think that it's just an extension of what has been happening over the past 10 years. And there will still be auctions, live auctions in person. But the great thing about technology is that, you know, just like people now can work from home and get the same, and be sometimes even more productive than being in an office, I think it's only going to benefit the auction industry even more.
Right. I think it's provided another channel. That is, that channel has become more frequented because of the comfort level of buyers online. So it really has opened up a whole other way of working. Let me ask you something, Marshall.
When you, because I know you look at online auctions and you do follow some, like the cars and things. When you do you find that you have more confidence in the results when you see them, and you think, oh, you know, when before you might have thought, oh, nah, this really couldn't have sold for that amount, but now, in real time, when you see these things happen, and then you go back and you're doing research on things, do you feel more confident in the results from online auction than you did even 5 years ago?
Isn't that confident? It feels like by checking two or three times a week and coming up with these items, it levels the playing field for me. All of a sudden, yeah, there's still a few things that that make my hair stand on end, but when you look at the overall auction, and you look, it can be paintings, it can be statues, it can be cars, it can be clothes from celebrities, it can be celebrity items. You know what? I have a greater appreciation for what goes into putting these auctions together to make the most out of it and do the job for the people auctioning these things off. I have a much greater appreciation for it, the work that goes into it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think you're not alone there. I think it's the confidence that has been instilled in bidders over the years because of the media hype about some of the things that have sold. I think that also has helped the industry. And especially, you know, we can sit here and say, well, you know, 2020 was with the pandemic was, you know, so devastating. But, you know, if you look back at the auction records, the online auction records for the past year, there's anything but a disaster. So it wasn't as bad.
Yes. I mean, there was a decline. It wasn't all rosy.
But it's still on the uptick. And it's really just, as I said, it's a complete global reset. And I think the auction companies who have really embraced that are the ones that are going to really take it to the next level.
Sure. Well, and it goes back to what I said about strategy. Look at the Federer auction. So they did 20 lots live. Made a lot of money, and then they put 300 online. They would never have done the 300 live. They're putting it online, letting people look at it. There's a strategy. It becomes a different channel, another way of utilizing that technology to really optimize the results.
Now, yeah. I want to break in here because one of the true things I really do enjoy when I look for these articles is when something that is rare that people think is nothing turns out to be something. And that happened this week with a painting called Philosopher Reading. And all it is a small round painting of a guy with a beard. It was owned by a French family, and they had it just hanging up their apartment. And they thought it was worthless. Well, they had an auctioneer come in, and guess what? It sold at auction for $9.2 million.
Whoa.
$9.2 million. I don't know how to pronounce the man's name. Jean-Henri Fragonard. Once again.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Fragonard.
Yeah. $9.2 yes. million. And it was basically one step away from the junk heap.
Right. That's why we tell people if you have a question, it's always good to. To find out, you know, to just send a photo, contact someone, just see, just to double check. But yes, this Philosopher Reading painting is now the third most expensive work by the Rococo artist to sell at auction. Is considered? Yeah, it sold it. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. And yeah, I'm just looking up the photo here. I mean,
it's a pleasant enough painting, but it's amazing. See, these are the things I think that keep bringing me back and other people back, because I think everybody, it's like the lottery. Everybody has in the back of their mind they're going to win the lottery or they're going to own something that is worth millions of dollars. And of course, 99.99999% of the time, no. What you have is what right. you have, but still, right. when you have these stories come out of the lightning bolt, it really shows that if you have a question and the answer is going to be no, basically, you have something that you like and it's not worth all this money, but still, it's worthwhile to investigate it. I guess nowadays don't let it pass but by.
Even looking at that painting, there's just amazing brushstrokes and the way that it's done. There's something, when I look at it, there's something, wow, let's investigate. But most people don't. Well, they just, yeah, and it's hard for them to see.
The Fragonard is very, let's see, how can I say it? He's very copyable. In fact, yes. He's, a lot of his paintings have been used by students to copy over the years, because even looking at this painting, when you see it, and it looks, if you look at the painting as a whole, and you've seen his other works, you would recognize that, even if it wasn't signed or anything, you would be able to recognize this as a Fragonard because of this, of, you know, his brush strokes, the way he almost in a, what's the word I'm looking for here? It's almost in an impressionistic look. It's not, you know, if you look at it very closely, if you don't really see like clean lines, you see, it's much more impressionistic. That's kind of the wrong way to say it, I suppose, but it's not as representative of a lot of the other artists that really trying to have that discernible fine lines, the clarity. So Fragonard was really a great painter for this, and he did a lot of large works as well. But this is, I think, one of the reasons that it might have sold so high is this is a rather unusual shape for his work.
Yeah.
He usually did larger works than this.
Well,
so,
also in the story, it said that there was a three-way bidding war, which it wasn't just two people. I mean, there was a London dealer and two other private collectors that were fighting it out, you know, the testosterone bidding to try and, you know, to drive the price up. So, you know, it's one of those things that it wasn't just one person against a reserve or anything. It was, there was a lot of interest. There was interest in that.
Now, there's something that sold that I'm surprised sold for less than I thought, and that is the gun that Vincent van Gogh shot himself with. It only brought in about 130,000 pounds. And I think, see, something like that to me is a real different item. I thought that it would bring in more, but 130,000 pounds for the gun that he used to kill himself and Vincent van Gogh, I would think it would go for more than that. But that's why I don't own anything of value.
Well, I don't know if you've actually seen what it looks like, but it's virtually not even recognizable for the most part as a gun. It's just a rusted lump with just the skeleton of the gun, and it doesn't. It's not even in, you know, working condition. Or I mean, that's still amazing to me. $180,000.
Well, if,
but you know, the thing is, because if you would take away the name Van Gogh, and it wouldn't, you know, this would probably just be a piece of junk. But the fact that this is the gun that he took his own life with is the reason I think that it's survived and that it's sold for that amount of money. So
I would just think it would be kind of cool if you owned a Van Gogh painting to add that to your painting. It would seem like there's a little more history involved in there, not just a normal history. That's all.
That's true. Can you imagine having the painting that his self-portrait with his ear cut off and then having this mounted next to it?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, and here just for comparison, I mean, here's a bigger name, Jesse James, and it's a .44 caliber Smith & Wesson sold at auction for $350,000. So, you know, it's...
Well, that's Jesse James, yeah.
Well, that's Jesse James, but when you look at that, that's
really
$350,000. Right, right. But then you think, okay, Van Gogh, then that's okay, and it's not, the gun isn't not as in great condition. So you scale it back a little bit, but that's still a good price. I mean, so what you're doing, Marshall, is you're looking at it just in a void, but once you start looking at it against other, and that's what we have to do as appraisers, is compare and contrast and put contrast and context to the actual piece, then it starts making sense. Then it's like, oh, okay, well, there was a Texas Sam Wilson's Colt Walker sold for $920,000, a Texas Ranger, so of course. But then, you know, there's others that have sold and were more or less notorious. And with that provenance, with that background, with that name and ownership, then that goes way up. But you know, Van Gogh is more known for his work with a paintbrush, not so much with a gun. So
I
that's
guess if
probably
it,
why.
I'm surprised his ear wasn't auctioned off though.
Right.
So that would have probably bought a lot of money.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I am surprised that it hasn't been kept for posterity, like a lot of the other body parts over the millennium that have been removed, saved, and end up at on the auction block. So if you recall, we've done a couple of shows a number of years ago where it was just body parts. We had, whose was it? It was somebody's finger. Oh, there was Napoleon's penis. And you can't make this stuff up. So, I mean, to see Van Gogh's ear would not be shocking at all.
Well, I just I enjoy, now that I've gotten into this, I enjoy learning more about auctions by investigating it myself and then bringing it to the table here on your show.
It's fun.
I'm getting better and better at this.
You're getting that.
I do have one challenge for you for next week, and I'll ask if. Just type in Fragonard paintings and go to images. And if you look at them, I guarantee that you will see how identifiable this artist is just by looking at his paintings. And a lot of times, paintings from this time period, it's difficult because a lot of them were students of. So a lot of them were trying to imitate perfectly. But if you see how the style of how he painted, you can understand how this particular painting sold for so much.
All right. Well, once again, you guys have done it. Thank you very much. The Frickin' Frack of Nick and Knack, Tim Luke and Greg Strong. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Okay, have a great week.
Take care, Marshall.
Take care, bye-bye. Tim Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys here on Robinhood Radio. Once again, you can find them at tqag.com on the web.